Good morning, everybody. Welcome to my talk on OAuth Rewind, which is a tool that enables record and replay troubleshooting for operational networks. And this is joint work with Dan Levin, who is also a PhD student and also here, and Srini Setaraman, who works in our Deutsche Telekom lab in Los Altos, as well as in Stanford, and with my advisor, Anja Feldman. Our tool makes heavy use of an emerging network technology called OpenFlow, so I'd like to start out with a quick 101 on that. Let's jump right in. So this is sort of a very simplified schematic view of a classical smart switch. In principle, you will have sort of two layers that are important for the operation. You have a hardware-based forwarding plane with sort of the crossbar and a TCAM, a ternary counted accessible memory that decides where flows gets forwarded. And on top of that, you have a control OS that runs on an embedded system. And this is sort of the intelligence of the switch. This is what decides what gets into the TCAM and what doesn't. And you can access this control OS over a variety of configuration interfaces like CLI, web interface, and SNMP. But usually, you can't control what is inside of this TCAM in a very fine-grained manner. Now, what OpenFlow does, it adds another API to this system that is a little more powerful, and this basically gives you a fine-grained access to the TCAM, to the forwarding table, and that allows you to customize the forwarding and write a custom user program that's run as a user space program on a commodity PC, a controller, to control the forwarding. And how would that look like? A simple message exchange as an example. So if a packet arrives at the switch that the switch doesn't have an entry for, it will create a packet in event, and that will be sent to the controller that basically tells the controller, I have a new flow here that I don't know what to do with. And typically, the controller might generate a flow mod event that will basically contain a rule for this packet and a set of similar packets that will be sent to the switch, which will then install an entry in the flow table. And that will cause the packet to be forwarded to its appropriate destination. Now, if another packet comes along that matches the same flow definition, it will automatically be forwarded by the forwarding hardware at line speed on the data plane. And this is basically what gives you a nice combination of a custom programmable control plane, but it's still a commodity full line speed forwarding hardware that can also be high fan out, so you can have 48 ports with 1 gigabit for a fairly cheap price. Quick look at how such an OpenFlow rule entry looks like. The most important part is the rule itself, and this is basically what matches on the packets. And you can see that there's sort of a cross section of header fields that start from layer 1, so the input switch port, to layer 4, TCP or UDP source and destination ports that you can match up on, or that you can wildcard. And what this gives you basically is a customizable flow definition. So a flow can be really a TCP half connection, but it also can be an IP prefix like you would use in normal routing. And then basically you decide what you want to do with packets that match these flow, and also some statistics are kept. So this is the rough idea behind OpenFlow. How can we actually use it to improve network debugging? As a motivating use case, this plot. This is a plot of the CPU utilization of such an OpenFlow switch in the November of 2009 in the Stanford OpenFlow prototype network. And the story behind it was basically the operator had updated the controller, but it wasn't sort of a major update. Nothing had really changed. And all of a sudden, some of the switches started acting up very strangely. And what you see is sort of that every 20 minutes, you'd have this sawtooth pattern where the CPU utilization would skyrocket to 100%. And that's really bad when the CPU utilization reaches 100% in these switches, because that means they cannot sort of set up flows fast enough and the user experience suffers. Now, this is a prototype switch, but obviously still it's a hardware platform and it's a closed box. So it's a black box in the system. We can't really look into what happens inside of the box. And so what they try to do is find an analytic explanation for that by trying to correlate the different kinds of messages that were exchanged with the perceived symptoms. And this is an example plot where we look at the packet arrivals of packet in messages correlated with the CPU utilization. And you see that the packet in messages are actually fairly regular, and there's no visible correlation with the problem. Another type of message, flow mod, it seems a little bit more random, but still there's no visible correlation whatsoever. And you can continue that with a number of other events, and probably that's too small to see from the back, but the takeaway message is some of them are regular, some of them are random, none of them correlate in any way with the 20-minute pattern we see in the problem. Right, so that leaves us pretty clueless at that point. The switch is a black box component. We can't inspect its internal state. We can't really look at the source code or run a debugger or anything. And we couldn't find an analytical explanation for this behavior because the message arrivals do not correlate, apparently, with the symptoms. And we have a few interfaces that we can use, like CLI and SNMP, but really they are too coarse-grained to really localize the problem in this black box. So that was this one specific use case, but the more general lesson is, and that's probably something that most people would agree upon, that troubleshooting networks can be really hard. And there's a number of reasons for that. One is scale. Basically, networks are huge, both in numbers of nodes, in the geographic spread, and in the data volume and rate, so it's really difficult to actually understand what's going on and monitor all of this. They're also critical. So when you have a problem in the production network, you usually need to try to get it back to running as fast as possible. You can't burden yourself with trying to really zoom in, localize, or do root cause research. Another problem, we've had that switch already, you have these black boxes that are really annoying from a troubleshooting standpoint, but they are a reality and they're not going to go away. You can't inspect their internal state. And you have, as this network is a distributed system, you have lots of timing dependencies, you have independent clocks, you have race conditions, and basically lots of these events can be due, or lots of the problems can be due to a specific sequence or intersection of events in the network from specific sources. Now, maybe an idea that could help, instead of sort of frantically trying to play around and reproduce the problem, you try to record what happens on the network. And then when you actually have a problem, or you solve your problem first in a production network, and then you take that recording that you took and replay it at a convenient time and location and place, basically in the lab over a part of your network. And that might help you to actually troubleshoot a little bit better. Now that seems like a neat idea. Aren't there existing approaches that do that? So there's actually, in the context of sort of end hosts of servers, there's very sophisticated systems that do replay debugging. It's a feature that is available in VM Workstation. There's also tools that sort of work in the data center context. And they usually give you fully deterministic replay. And they do that via binary instrumentation or by playing funky tricks with virtualization. And the problem here, why we can't use these kinds of things, though, is that because they do these fine-grained instrumentation, they can't support black boxes. And also, if you scale that to an entire network, scalability might be a problem. And then there's two classical tools that probably most people have used at some point who work in networks, TCP dump and TCP replay. And they actually do that. They capture traffic on a network and they replay event. But they don't do that for an entire network, but just for a single vantage points. And so, due to the high data plane rates that you might observe in a network, they also run into scalability issues in some kind. And a question that you might ask is a full recording of all these events in a network even feasible? And maybe that's actually not true, so it's not feasible. However, not all traffic is created equal. So intuitively, control plane traffic is a lot more important for what happens on the network than data plane traffic. And there's actually a nice study that Jon Stoica and Gautam Altekar did last year that looked at this in a data center context. And they found that control plane traffic makes up for only 1% of the traffic observed, but for 95 to 99% of the bugs. And this is something that we'd like to sort of use to make this problem a little more tractable. And sort of an observation that we made during our experiments here is that many of these network devices turn out to be fairly deterministic with respect to the control plane network events that they see. And this is something that we use. So what are we going to do? We're going to record events and traffic on the network. We're going to do that selectively. So we record important information, like control plane traffic, and we skip or aggregate less important traffic. And then we take these partial replays and re-inject these events and traffic onto the network. In some sense, this is a best effort replay. It's clear that this is not strictly deterministic and can't be. But we can actually, we don't have to do that when the problem occurs on a production network. We can actually reproduce the problem at a chosen time and location. And our hope is that for the recording, we can, with this system, go actually network-wide, and network in this case means sort of an open flow controller domain, and have this running always on. Now, when we replay, what can we actually do to localize the problem a little bit better? There's a few things that we like to do and that I'd like to share with you. We can do device mapping, and that means we can actually map the traffic, the recorded traffic before replay, to different devices. We can change the recording before replay, like we can change IP addresses. That also includes changing TCP sequence numbers, for instance, and that helps us to investigate regressions and vendor implementation issues. We can also play with time, and that means we can sort of make it faster, make it slower. That helps to investigate timing issues, and also we might be able to fast forward over some boring parts that are not relevant. And maybe the most important powerful tool is bisection. So we take our input trace and we replay it, and then we iteratively subselect and bisect the traffic, and we zoom in on the problem that triggered the failure. So this is sort of the idea. Let's talk a little bit about the goals that we want to reach. We want to be able to really record a controller domain, and that means it has to be scalable enough. We have to be selective about what we record, and we want some amount of consistency, which means in our case that we want the global ordering of the flows to be preserved. And we want to be able to do that even in the presence of these annoying black boxes that we can't get rid of. And with this replay, with this recording, we want to do coordinated replay, and we want to be able to tweak and play with the replay, and that might help us to localize problems. A few things that we don't want to do in this work: we don't want to do real root cause analysis, and the reason for that is the root cause, more likely than not, might be in such a black box, and we can't sort of run the debugger and really find the actual bug that causes the malfunction. And I've talked about sort of interesting control plane traffic and not so interesting data plane traffic. One question that might be asked is sort of, is that sort of an automatic decision, or is it a manual configuration? For now, we really assume there is an operator who decides what is sort of critical traffic and what's not. We don't do automatic configuration yet. And because of the nature of these black boxes also, we can't be sure that we do fully deterministic replay. It's a best effort thing at the end of the day for the replay. Okay, let's have a look at the tool. So the basic design of OAuth Rewind consists of two main modules: OAuth Rewind itself, which is sort of the master of the game, and a number of data store modules. And we can have any number in the system. We'll have a little more details about that soon. And each of these have two modules in them, one that does the recording and one that does the replay. So for the recording case, let's have a look at how we would actually deploy that in a network and how that would work. So this is a sort of a standard small open flow network. We have three switches in the middle, and then we have an open flow controller at the top and a few clients at the bottom. Now, what we will do is we'll insert the OAuth record component as a proxy into the open flow controller path, and OAuth record will intercept and also record the open flow control plane messages that are observed here. Also, we'll attach a few data stores to the switches, and this is what these components will record: the data plane traffic that's actually relevant for or that has been selected to be recorded. And notice that we don't have to attach a data store to every switch, but we can also attach several data stores to one switch if we actually presume there's lots of data that's going to be recorded here. Now, let's have a look at this in action. Let's assume that C1 in the bottom left corner wants to talk to C6 in the bottom right corner. And for simplicity, let's assume that the ARP entries have already been exchanged. So what will happen, C1 will send the first packet of the flow, which might be TCP SYN packet, to the switch. And the switch doesn't have a flow table entry. Again, it will create a packet in that's sent to the controller. And this packet in will traverse off record, where it will be recorded as well as forwarded to the controller. And the switch will create a flow mod. In this case, it might create a flow mod that sends the packets out P2 and send it back to the switch. Again, it will traverse off record. And in that case, it will be recorded. And if data plane recording of this particular flow is required, then off record will translate this message to not include not only P2, but also a monitoring port where data store is attached. And when this is sent to the switch, that will cause the SYN packet and all the packets of the flow that follow it to be duplicated and sort of also recorded by the data store. So this is the recording case. Let's have a quick look at how the replay case works. One thing to notice, we can actually replay towards different types of components in the system. In this particular case, we're replaying towards the switch, and that means we can get rid of the original controller and as well as the clients. Now, the first packet that we recorded was the packet in for P1, and that will be read by off replay. And an off replay will interact with the data store to have the flow started, which means that there is a SYN packet sent to the switch. That then results in a packet in message to off replay. And these are two matching events which will be recognized by off replay, and that means they're considered done. Then we have a flow mod message recorded, and this message will be translated so that it actually matches the packet that has come from the data store as opposed to the original client sent to the switch, and that will send the packet on its way to the destination. So there are a few more subtleties involved, obviously, especially for synchronizing the flows in those different data stores, but I won't be going into the details of that in the interest of time, and I invite you to have a look at the paper for that. In another case, you're basically looking at problems in the OpenFlow controller, and that means that OF replay takes the role of the network and the switches, and basically there's packages exchanged between the controller and OF replay, and you can get rid of all of your network. How would we expect such a tool to be used? We'd expect off record to be deployed in the production environment as a proxy to the regular controller, and we would always on record off messages, OpenFlow control plane messages, and data plane summaries, and sort of selected control plane traffic onto a ring storage. And then obviously, as sort of the operator experience grows with the system, we'd alter selection rules as necessary. And once we encounter a problem, we deploy a part of our network that we suspect to be causing the problem in a lab environment and use the replay to localize bugs and validate bug fixes. I'd like to talk to you about two case studies. There's more that are mentioned in the that were mentioned on the poster and also in the paper. So the two studies that we're looking at is a case where we're debugging a black box component, and this is our initial motivating use case, the CPU inflation in an OpenFlow switch. And another case study that we're going to look at is debugging OpenFlow controllers. And this is a problem in the popular Knox controller. So back to the CPU inflation case, remember that 20-minute sawtooth pattern that wasn't sort of analytically explainable. So what we do is we basically replay, we record the trace on the production network, and then we replay and bisect the trace by message type. And when we do that, and when we replay a specific message type, the stats request message, so that was the arrival rate during the recording, we notice that this actually reproduces the sawtooth pattern with this characteristic 20 minutes interval. The frequency is a little bit lower just because the switch is much more lightly loaded, but the pattern is visible. And so this basically concludes that the stat request message reproduced the problem, even though there's no correlation in arrival time. So it was really difficult to find that problem and get any good information of why what problem we're actually looking at without being able to record and replay. Another case was a problem with the Knox controller that in that case, messages by one specific device in another campus couldn't actually reach the Knox controller, so the messages just vanished. And this was just for this particular device. It wasn't the type of device. It wasn't reproducible with sort of other devices of the same kind, and it was not reproducible in Stanford at the lab. And one way to actually do this is basically you can record the trace at the end user site and then take the trace to the lab and replay and basically set up a very simple environment with replay and Knox, and then use host-level debugging to analyze the Knox behavior. And that, the trigger of the problem was actually a little bit funny, so I'd like to mention it here. It was the specific source address of this device. It was this one, and probably that looks like a perfectly innocent MAC address to anyone in the room. But it turns out Knox has a pseudo-intelligent MAC address parser that handles both binary and ASCII MAC addresses. And this byte 3A here happens to be the ASCII representation of a colon. And that basically basically tripped up the parser. It thought it was an ASCII address. It failed to parse it, and then it dropped the message. And obviously, that's a really, really stupid bug, and it shouldn't be there. But this is maybe an example of some of the stupid bugs that you just have in production sometimes and that you need to deal with. Okay, let's have a quick look at the performance. Of Rewind, for we are looking at sort of two cases. For the recording, we consider a production environment, so we need to have a look at the controller performance of Record. It's like, how does it perform as a controller? And we also need to have a look at, does it have a significant impact on the switch performance? And then we're basically looking at the replay, which is happening in the lab environment, and we'd like to have a quick look at the end-to-end timing accuracy. So this is a plot of the controller performance of Record. This is measured with a tool named Cbench, and on the x-axis we see sort of a number of switches that's sort of increasing that's simulated, and on the y-axis the flow rate that's successfully handled. And we do this for a number of different controllers that include sort of the simple reference controller by Stanford and some popular production controllers and OAuth Record. And sort of the takeaway message here is that simple controller outperforms everyone else, which isn't that surprising because it doesn't do a whole lot. But all of the sort of popular production controllers, and that includes Knox, and also FlowVisor, which is used for network virtualization, and OAuth Record are pretty much in the same ballpark. So we can assume that in a controller chain where you would have these production controllers and OAuth Record is not going to present a significant bottleneck. Now, another question. OAuth Record makes the switches do a little bit of extra work. So does it impact the switch performance significantly? And to measure that, we create single UDP packet flows that are evenly spaced with HPing, and we send that to switches of two different vendors. And then we measure the number of flows that are successfully forwarded. And we do that for OAuth Record, and we compare that with just a simple controller, because that was the fastest one in the earlier test. And this is the result. On the x-axis, we see the flows that are sent. On the y-axis, the flows that are successfully received. And what we notice is that the flows are sort of grouped by vendor very strongly. So for vendor A, the switch saturates at around 700 flows per second. For vendor B, it saturates at a lower rate, and then at some point when we send more flows, it even breaks down. But if we now compare the curves for OAuth Simple versus OAuth Record, we notice that there's only a very limited impact on the performance penalty on the switch. Now for the replay, a quick look at sort of how reliably can we forward flows and what's the timing accuracy. And we can basically see that we don't drop any flows until 400 flows per second, and then sort of flows start to be dropped end to end. And we are still investigating what the source of this problem is. We assume that it has to do with the prototype switches. A standard deviation is sort of good enough for the lower flow rates, but when you go to the higher flow rates, it might need a little bit of work. So to summarize, I have sort of introduced two new primitives: selective consistent and multi-granularity network recording, and adaptive coordinated best effort network replay. And basically, what this enables you to do is to record relevant traffic of your network and then potentially reproduce a problem at a convenient time and place, so in your lab, instead of sort of while everything's down on the production network. And this is combined in OF Rewind, an open flow based tool for network record and replay, which is available at this URL. It's still a very alpha research prototype, but it's certainly there and open source. And to our knowledge, it's the first tool that basically can do that to enable practical record and replay of a network domain. And with that, I conclude my talk. Thank you for your attention, and I'd like to take your questions.
Hi, Marco Canini, PFL. I wonder if you comment, if you have put thought about what would be the issues to make this scale in case you were envisioning a live deployment of this infrastructure for a large network.
So one thing that's sort of still under investigation for OpenFlow in general is basically you have to centralize control, and obviously that scales to some system size that won't scale to very large networks, so you might have to go to a distributed controller system, and that is obviously I haven't seen any of these distributed controller networks in practice yet. Obviously there's sort of a trade-off between the consistency that you can achieve of the view of the network view and the overhead that you need for synchronization in the distributed case. But in principle, you can actually use the same sort of synchronization mechanisms that we use to synchronize between different data stores that are described in the paper. I skipped over them in the talk. To also synchronize or maintain consistency over a distributed controller set. But the finer grained you do that, the more overhead you have. And sort of as an engineer, I'd like to see that in practice before I really comment on the behavior.
Would also the fact that, you know, you're looking at control plane traffic, but that could be also a large portion of traffic, would that represent also an issue for scale?
So
the amount of traffic that you end up recording.
So if the control plane traffic is significant, then obviously that sort of, or if you need a very significant portion of the traffic to even be able to say something about the problem that you're observing, then obviously makes this whole point of being able to select stuff a little weaker. You still have, though, one thing that can actually be useful. You can still have the load balancing over these several recorders, and you don't have to build basically a single monitoring probe that can handle a 40 gigabit link, but you can have a bunch of them, and you can load balance over them, and that might be a whole lot cheaper.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Praveen Nyalgandula, HP Labs. Actually, on the scalability front, I'm not that much worried about the controller scalability, but you have data stores that need to be distributed and attached to each of the switches in the network. That seems like a hard thing to do in a production network. Is it easy to build a OF rewind and replace infrastructure where you can divert these packets to a central store, say to a central data store, instead of needing to put one
with
each switch in the network?
Right, so that's actually something that's certainly possible. You can basically, instead of sort of having a local monitoring port, you can basically have the controller route them to a port that's not necessarily attached, or not necessarily local to the path of the flow. One thing to notice is we don't require a data store on every switch in the network, but if we want to record a data plane flow, then there has to be a data store somewhere on the path of the flow with our system at this point. But it would, in principle, be possible to actually route them to a location that's not local to a switch. And record the flow there. But there actually has been some work in Infocom last year on that. It's called measure routing But in this context, we haven't looked into how to do that.
What's the hard problem there?
What you certainly need to be careful about is sort of that you don't overload your links with sort of monitoring traffic. So you need to isolate traffic. You need to be careful about how you allocate it and sort of predict the bandwidth of the flows. And that's obviously a little bit easier if we have the dedicated interface that's just used for monitoring, and that we can sort of rely on to just output the traffic, and we know it's not going to impact the production path.
My second question is for the CPU inflation. A quick